you with any great background, etc. The
Norman Holtzman, the presidential campaign has centered on, among other things, a strong defense posture and tax cuts. Now, as a member of the U.S. Senate, could you tell me how you would cut federal spending to allow for tax cuts while increasing spending on military appropriations?
I'm not running for president, so I don't have to respond to the issues that the presidential candidates raise with respect to their own particular platforms. But let me say that I think we as a member of the House Budget Committee and as a representative in Congress, I have fought vigorously against waste in federal programs. And I think we can, by applying some very tough and commonsensical management techniques, save billions of dollars. I think also we have to make sure that our defense posture is strong, and I have supported a strong defense. I do not support waste, whether it's in the defense budget or elsewhere, and have fought against that as well. With respect to taxes, I think we have some very serious problems, particularly with respect to an increase in the Social Security tax that will take place next January. I have called specifically for a way of offsetting that tax. I think that tax, if it goes into effect, will impose a very serious burden on middle-income taxpayers, and I intend to oppose that.
Senator Javits, you have 30 seconds to respond.
The defense figure in the budget is a figure I fixed in an amendment I offered at $153.7 billion. I am for a tax cut which will be about 50-50 business-personal. Business, in order to improve and increase the productivity of this country, the real way in which to break inflation. As to reduction of spending, it must be by cutting out the frills and, very importantly, deferring what can be deferred. I myself voted for $13 billion in such cuts, so it can be done.
You are out of time,
I'll help to do it.
Mr. D'Amato. You have 30 seconds, Mr. D'Amato.
It seems like, okay, we're never going to bring about a sense of fiscal discipline unless we stop the giveaway kind of philosophy that the bureaucracy has adopted. When we have General Accounting Office, by its own admission, indicating that there are $35 billion in wasteful practices, I think we have to make a major concerted effort to damp down that kind of unwarranted spending. I think that an essential ingredient of this nation is the fact that we have a strong and a balanced military so that we can ensure peace. What we've seen take place is an unrestrained spending in the social transfer tax.
I'm sorry, sir, you're out of time. Peggy Stockton, your question, please, for Senator Javits.
Senator, do you believe, as Amy Carter does, that nuclear proliferation
Please, would you hold your applause until the end of the program?
That's a great one.
That nuclear proliferation is the greatest problem facing us?
I believe that nuclear proliferation is the most awesome problem facing us, but I believe that necessity for limiting the competition in strategic nuclear armaments is an even more vital question, though the other ranks pretty high. Secondly, and very importantly, I would continue on SALT II with the effort to arrive at a limitation on that type of armament. And lastly, and very importantly, I would deal as priority number one with a disarray which we find with our allies. Our security is based upon alliances, and right now our greatest weakness is that our allies are not effectively harmonizing their policy with us. It can be done, both as to the geographic area within Europe, which is already accomplished by NATO, and as the area outside of Europe, like the Persian Gulf and the Middle East. That should be number one priority.
Thank you, Senator Javits. Mr. D'Amato, you have 30 seconds to rebut.
I think we need a strong defense. I think we need a strong, vibrant, free economic enterprise system that can only come about if we bring about some realistic tax cuts in the area of productivity to encourage real jobs, meaningful jobs, rather than the see-to-make-work kind of attitude. I think that strategic arms limitation is important, but it must be accompanied by an agreement that does not give a advantage, a tactical advantage to anyone, and is the subject of verification.
30 seconds are up, sir. I'm sorry. Ms. Holtzman, 30 seconds.
Well, the question of what kind of world we will live to future generations is indeed a very serious one. I support the SALT Treaty. If I were elected to the Senate, I would vote for it. Secondly, with respect to nuclear proliferation, I voted against the sale of nuclear material to India. I am deeply concerned over the fact that France has supplied Iraq not only with a nuclear power plant that creates the capacity to create a nuclear bomb, but that France has agreed after the war started between Iraq and Iran to send nuclear material. I think we cannot allow countries such as that to have the capacity to destroy the world.
The next question will be Steve Flanders to Mr. D'Amato.
Mr. D'Amato, one of the problems interjected into this campaign has been this question of integrity. My question to you is, do you feel that you have responded to publications and allegations sufficiently to raise any shadow on your candidacy? And if you're elected, do you feel that you'll be able to serve without any shadow?
Steve, I have responded openly, candidly. I have bared my soul, myself, when called upon to make available testimony that as a witness I gave. I did so. I responded quickly, expeditiously. In that testimony, it's interesting to note, it's just as I had indicated, that I was a witness and voluntary. The assistant U.S. attorney says, Mr. D'Amato, you've never been accused, or is there any indication of any wrongdoing on your part? That seems to be just shallied over. In terms of some of the accusations made about me, in terms of deposits that were made by other officials independently elected, and when we look at the record very clearly, we see that there was an opinion that comes from the controller's office that said those officials had to invest the way they were, and they couldn't invest in interest-bearing accounts, and yet there were those who would seek to try to tar me with the innuendos. And the fact in the record is that I was returned by an overwhelming plurality last time, and these kinds of things had come up, that people have faith
I'm
and confidence.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but your time is up.
I've run the kind of administration
and
that
Steve
I'm proud
Flanders,
of.
Sir, has the next question for Senator Jevons.
Senator, on this matter of integrity,
excuse me, Steve. I did forget the rebuttal. 30 seconds for rebuttal. Senator Javits.
There used to be an expression, I think it's still valid, go along and get along in politics. And I think that characterizes Mr. D'Amato. He knew the system. He was a party to the system. There's no question about that anymore. And that system means not only corruption, it means independence. We appoint judges, we appoint prosecutors, we ratify treaties, we do many very profitable things. And I hope very much that if Mr. D'Amato should be elected,
your time is up, sir.
I hope he's not, that
Steve
he'll remember
Flanders,
that.
Sir, has the next question. And you have a rebuttal.
Thank you.
I'll get this under control yet.
Thank you very much. We've had a great tradition of outstanding senators from New York State. And I think the questions that have been raised by public agencies, including a grand jury, about the widespread corruption and mismanagement in Nassau County raises some very serious questions about Mr. D'Amato. Either he was silent in the face of widespread corruption and widespread political abuse of power, or he was part of the problem. And I think the voters will have to decide whether he measures up to the standard that's been set by prior senators in the past.
Thank you, Ms. Holtzman. All right, Steve Flanders now with an original question for Senator Javits.
Senator Javits, if you are reelected, would you support an investigation of what led up to the taking of our hostages, the decisions that were made at the highest level?
Without any question, I believe such an inquiry is very necessary, and if reelected, I would be an important party to it, as I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee, which will make such an investigation. The investigation being designed to establish fault as well as to establish a better way in which to deal with this situation. I do not believe that the United States dealt with it in the optimum way to begin with because of the President's great fear that there would be harm to the hostages, and that's a very legitimate one. On the other hand, a nation like Israel has a policy of not negotiating with this kind of terror at all, but seeking to knock it down, as they did it in Tebe. And then, for example, Mr. D'Amato has suggested the idea, well, maybe we should have bombed them. Well, those are options, too. And I believe it's high time the United States had a finite policy, which
Thank
is
you,
better
Senator.
Than the one we have.
Mrs. Holtzman, you have 30 seconds for rebuttal.
Well, I believe that the decision, once the hostages were taken, to assure that their lives would be protected and saving their lives was the highest priority, was, in my judgment, and is correct. I do think at some point, if the hostages are allowed to be released, and I fervently hope and pray that they will be, that we understand why precautions were not taken to prevent that in the first place. It may have been a failure of communication. It may have been inadequate intelligence. It may have been transmission problems in terms of the information that was received. I just think that we ought to be in a position in the future not to allow hostages to be taken information comes to our
Mr.
DeMato,
30 minds
seconds. About that.
Well, I think that the situation was handled in a less than adequate and appropriate manner. I think to go into it any further at this time with the hostages literally on a day-by-day basis and hour-by-hour basis, the great anxiety in terms of how and when will they be released, and we certainly pray that they will, would be an injustice. But I think the American public is entitled to know how we allowed the situation to take place with the fall of Iran, not cautioning our ally of long standing, and why we didn't have the information to prevent the kind of occurrence
Your
that took place.
Your time is up, sir. Peggy Stockton, a question, please, for Mr. DeMato.
Yes, Mr. DeMato. Did you approve of the 1% kickbacks that officials in Nassau County had to make to the GOP?
Not only did I not approve of it, but the fact is that I made it perfectly clear, loud and often, that no one would have to contribute any monies for promotions. It was my administration that was credited with bringing about the rectifying of a situation in terms of abuses with the Civil Service Commission. It was my administration that brought about an entire new situation in terms of dealing with insurance policies. Not only did we change the system, we went into a self-insurance program. And so my administration has been credited with bringing about many reforms that heretofore had not been the case, and I take great pride in that. The fact that I may have made a contribution on behalf of someone many years ago, or that I may have used the 1% as a guide in terms of my own voluntary contributions, and certainly no one should say that it's wrong to contribute. What about the slush fund that the unions are asking for now in New York City and Victor Gottbaum lobbying for? I think we'd better look into that. Do you really think that employees will have free access, or
Senator
will they be
Javis.
Required to contribute?
Mr. DeMato, please. Senator Javits, you have 30 seconds to rebut.
Mr. DeMato is quoted as saying that he's a team player. Now, the people will have to judge whether that indicates a permanent state of mind and state of his feeling about integrity, or whether he was just a team player at the Hempstead. And I think it's a critical question in this campaign as to his fitness to be a senator. I think it's been very appropriately raised. Perhaps not enough attention, even now, has been devoted to it.
Thank you, Senator. Mrs. Holtzman, 30 seconds to rebut.
Well, Mr. DeMato's grand jury testimony shows that he was well aware of the practice that was going on, of the fact that civil service in Nassau County had to pay 1% to the Republican Party. He also mentions the fact that he knew that many people, especially young people, objected to that practice. I think the record with respect to the grand jury testimony and the record with respect to the letter that he himself wrote, where he admitted that a person couldn't get a raise unless a 1% was paid for
Thank
it,
you, Ms. Holtzman. Your time is
itself.
Up, too. Now, a question from Doug Edelson for Congresswoman Holtzman.
Ms. Holtzman, using the South Bronx as a symbol of urban decay, everybody talks about it, points to it, visits it, and says, how terrible. What posture would you take in the Senate to assure the nation's cities that they will get a fair share of federal funding, and where would this funding come from?
Well, I think that we have not had as much support as we needed from Washington to help rebuild our cities. And I think having two Democratic senators, and if I'm elected, we will have for the first time in 33 years two Democratic senators representing New York State. I think Senator Moynihan and I could fight effectively for trying to bring back to New York State a number of federal programs that we need. I think we need an expansion of the UDAG program, which helps to leverage private funds by a federal infusion of monies. I think we have to have much greater support for attracting industries into New York City and state. And one of the ways we can do this is to lower our tax burden in terms of welfare and Medicaid. I'd like to see that burden lifted from our shoulders. I myself have worked on the whole issue of rail freight and the fact that New York City is not linked directly across the Hudson River by rail, so that you cannot ship goods easily out of New York City. We need to rebuild our economic base.
Senator Javits, you have 30 seconds.
I was just voted the other day as the second most effective senator in the United States Senate, and the first was the Republican minority leader, and I'm a Republican, Howard Baker. So this idea that you got to be a Democrat in order to have any clout is not true. And the fact is that I've been personally involved directly with one-third of the federal money that comes to New York, and am just now, having gotten past the Senate, in the process of redoing the urban mass transit distribution formula.
Mr. D'Amato, 30 seconds.
The welfare and Medicaid formulas that discriminate against the business community and the average taxpayer in this state has not been by my doing. Both my colleagues have been in Congress for many years. They haven't fought to change that system. And that's why we have jobs leaving and industry going, because the cost of doing business in this state is prohibitive. And we pay $8.2 billion in local taxes and in state taxes. That's got to be changed. They haven't been addressing themselves to that, to fight for that. And we need tax cuts in the distressed urban areas if we're going to encourage business to stay and to expand.
The next rebuttal, please. That's a total rebuttal. I'm sorry. The next question will be Steve Flanders to Mr. D'Amato.
Mr. D'Amato, if you're elected to the Senate, what will be the things that you would seek to do for the Long Island commuters and the New York City strap hangers?
I think that one of the things we should undertake, number one, in terms of seeking a redress of a formula which penalizes New York State. We provide 35% of the public transportation of the nation's ridership, and yet we only get back 18% of the funds allocated for that formula. One more Democrat isn't going to change that situation. It's been a Democratic Congress that has brought that about. Now, if we change those formulas, it's going to free up tens of millions of dollars for the city, for the Long Island Railroad, for Conrail, for mass transit. Secondly, I think that it is so very, very important that we not only change that formula, but that we see to it that the Medicaid and welfare formulas that equally are oppressive are changed, so that local government will have the financial wherewithal to meet the problems, for example, in additional subway police and protection. And third of all, I think it's so important that we should consider, to encourage mass transit use, tax deductions for people who use mass transit. Why should it be only the businessman who has a car and not those who use mass transit have deductions?
Congresswoman Holtzman, 30 seconds of rebuttal.
Well, I have long supported, and as a member of the House Budget Committee, got additional funds to try to change the mass transit formula. We need more money. We have to have a major federal commitment to upgrading mass transit and to provide it in areas where it doesn't exist. But I would say we also need much better management, too. The MTA has done an abysmal job. It's done an abysmal job of running the subways. It's done a terrible job of running the Long Island Railroad and Conrail as well. We have to have better management as well as more money.
Hold the applause, please. Senator Javits, 30 seconds.
The Senate has already passed, with a real effort by me, a revised formula which will give New York $80 million more a year at the minimum, and that could go much higher. And we have every prospect of putting it through the House. And that is my work, which is involved in that. That's real. That's done. That's not a promise. And secondly, we've also very materially improved distribution of funds respecting education
and respecting youth employment.
All of them doing exactly what my opponents
your
say
time is
be
up,
done.
Senator. I'm very sorry. Peggy Stockton, do you have a question, please, for Congresswoman Holtzman?
Yes, Ms. Holtzman. Under the Senator Javits-sponsored War Powers Act, Congress must approve any presidential request for military action. Would you vote for military action if the Straits of Hormuz are closed?
Well, first of all, under the War Powers Bill, the President has the power for 60 days to introduce troops before Congress has a right to approve or before Congress can act. I think it depends on the circumstances. I think we had to be extremely careful about creating an additional possibility of war. War in the Straits of Hormuz at this point could lead to destruction of the oil fields in Saudi Arabia, in Kuwait, and lead to economic chaos in this country and the Western world. I think the actions that have been taken so far to keep the Straits open have been successful, and I would certainly hope that no military action is necessary. I think that that could lead to the objection that all of us want to see avoided here.
Mr. D'Amato, 30 seconds for rebuttal.
Well, I think that what we need is a cool approach to the situation, and I would hope that whoever the president was, that they would not find it necessary, by way of welding together concerted action of all of our allies, an action that we've lost heretofore, that capacity to lead and have them use their influence, both economic, both political. I don't believe that it's in the interest to have a war in that area, and that we must do everything possible to avoid it.
Your time is up. Thank you, sir. Congresswoman Holtzman. Senator Javis, I'm sorry.
The closing of the Straits of Hormuz would justify military action, but we would have to be very cool and very prudent about it. But priority number one is to start now to put our coalition together, which we're not doing. And our allies are in disarray. We have got to have that guarantee of affirmative aid by our allies of all kinds in order to plan should there be such an operation, and we're not doing it, and it's a big lack in everything we do.
Thank you, Senator. The next question will be Doug Edelson to Senator Javits.
Senator Javits, probably one of the most neglected classes of people in the United States are our senior citizens. How would you go about assuring them the guarantees of health, happiness, and freedom from worry in the remaining years? So far, little has been done to guarantee them this.
Well, I think there are three things that need to be done. One, we need to give them assurance about Social Security, which they're shaken up about. And that can best be done probably by taking disability out of the old age assistance and financing it separately in order to buttress the fund. And also, we're going to have to pay more money in tax, as we're going to do next year, and make up for it by a tax cut. I'm for a 10% tax cut on individuals for that reason. Secondly, and very importantly, we have to stimulate more private pension plans. There's a ceiling in Social Security, and the ERISA, of which I'm the author, assures people that private pension plans are desirable, good, and can work for them. Thirdly, we need a national health plan to relieve them of the fear of ill health and also to give them protective health care. And lastly, we need buttressing of housing for the elderly, which is a critical program in the Congress.
Thank you, Senator. Congresswoman Holtzman, 30 seconds to rebut.
I think we need clearly to adopt national health insurance. I think until that happens, we have to expand the Medicare program so that it can cover prescription drugs and eyeglasses and dental care. We've got to revise the reimbursement formula because people don't get 80% back on their doctor's bills, and they should. We have to deal also with the very serious problem that actually one out of every four women who works today will be poor when she's old, and we can do something about that now. And I'd like to see action taken.
Mr. D'Amato, 30 seconds.
I think we need some action in dealing with a great tragedy, that of the catastrophic illness, where a family can literally be wiped out. And I think a co-insurance plan that addresses itself to that, particularly when it comes to seniors or those approaching retirement age, is absolutely essential. Secondly, we've got to move very decisively in making available more programs such as Section 8 housing programs for our seniors, particularly those in the middle income range. They shouldn't be just poverty stricken to be eligible for that. And third of all, I think a very modest attempt.
Your time is up, Mr. D'Amato. Thank you very much. Peggy Stockton, a question, please, for Mr. D'Amato.
Yes, Mr. D'Amato. Your mother has been telling us that you're going to reduce the price of macaroni and spaghetti. How?
great inflation fighter she prepared.
How?
Is that the question?
That's
or,
the... No. How?
Oh, the question is how to reduce the price of macaroni?
Yes.
Oh. Well, she has prepared a very interesting booklet called Antoinette D'Amato's Recipes, Six Inflation Fighters, which is a good start. You know, veal costs $7 a pound. Why don't you invite people over to the house and cook up a meal for them? And how many Americans can't do that any longer? The fact of the matter is that we do have runaway inflation. The fact of the matter is that when President Carter took office, he talked about curbing inflation, taking that misery rate and reducing it, and it's doubled and tripled. The fact of the matter is you can't spend $65 billion more than you take in and think that you're going to have inflation under control. We're spending more than we take in. Our deficits are far beyond control. Our fiscal prudence leads to this situation. We don't have energy independence. We should have been building this kind of situation. It's contributed to the inflationary factors. And then, in addition, there's one other thought that I think we have to challenge the private sector. Give them the opportunity to do. Don't
Your
go
time
on
is up, Mr. D'Amato. Senator Javits, what will you do about the cost of macaroni?
The cost of macaroni and other products can only be brought down in real terms. We don't know what will happen to the finite dollars. And in real terms, that means improved incomes and less unemployment. And the only way you're going to do that is, in addition to governmental intelligence and economy, which will not solve it, we have to increase the productivity and competitiveness of the American business machine. If we do that, we'll give higher incomes, less unemployment, and the ability to buy our products.
Congresswoman Holtzman, 30 seconds.
I have a simple and practical answer. Impose controls on the price of American gas and American oil, and that will bring down the cost of fuel to the farmer. It will bring down the cost of fertilizer. It will bring down the cost of transportation of produce and of food products to cities. It will reduce the costs in supermarkets, and we can substantially reduce the cost of food if we're willing to put controls on the price of American gas and American oil instead of allowing those prices to be set by OPEC.
Thank you, Congresswoman Holtzman. The next question, please, from Steve Flanders to Ms. Holtzman.
Congresswoman Holtzman, a few weeks ago, Senator Moynihan said that when they shelved the SALT II treaty, that they could not have mustered more than 35 votes for it. A few minutes ago, you said if you're elected, you would vote for it. Why is it that you feel that it's acceptable in its form now?
I think it's acceptable because I think that without the SALT treaties, we are going to have a very dangerous escalation of the arms race, in which the United States will be much more vulnerable than it is today. I think that without these restraints, the Soviet Union, there's nothing to stop the Soviet Union from adding more warheads to its missiles and from increasing the danger in which the United States will find itself. I would like to see greater arms reductions than are called for in the SALT II treaty, but I think until that treaty is ratified, we are without any restraints with respect to escalation of the arms race, and without those restraints, the vulnerability of the United States is increased, and I would oppose that, and for that reason I support the SALT treaty.
Mr. D'Amato, 30 seconds of rebuttal.
I am for strategic arms limitation, but not with an agreement that is not subject to adequate verification. I don't believe that we can just put blind, simple faith and trust in the Russians to keep any agreement. And that's number one. And so I'd want to be assured that that agreement is capable of verification. Secondly, it gives to the Russians a strategic advantage in terms of their backfire bombers, in terms of counting into the formula an aged B-52 bomber, and I think that there are terms and conditions that must be renegotiated.
Okay. The rebuttal from Senator Javits.
The SALT II treaty I've worked on and sat through all the hearings and voted affirmatively in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I believe it is an essential cap on the arms race. Otherwise, it will be tremendously proliferated. It's only a step. And in the absence of ratification, and I don't believe there are the votes, what we should do is to amend it as we wish and then put it up for renegotiation rather than to junk it. If we junk it, it'll take another 7 years to get SALT III, and that would be a very grave mistake for our country and for the whole world.
The next question, Doug Edelson to Senator Javits.
Senator, one of the major problems facing the nation is the staggering unemployment of our youth. How do you feel about rolling back the pages of time to the old CCC concept or something similar to it?
The CCC concept can be an aid, but it's an expensive aid, and it's unnecessary. We have the youth bills now, some of which we've passed, and we have one going through the Congress now, which depend upon keeping kids in school and having them work at the same time. That is work study at the high school level. Secondly, we need to teach them skills where we can't keep them in school, and operations, both voluntary and governmental, are available for that purpose. A notable example, the Opportunities Industrialization Centers, run by the Reverend Leon Sullivan of Philadelphia. And thirdly, we need to get the business community to undertake an obligation, and I mean an obligation, to take up a million of these kids and train them in their factories and offices as a national contribution by them. I am myself the author of a rebate of 6 months' salary for unemployed kids who are come from very bad areas.
Thank you, Senator.
That's not enough to do.
Congresswoman Holtzman, 30 seconds.
I think we have to have a major federal program, and I have supported that in the House of Representatives to make sure that young people, especially young people in our ghetto areas, find employment. It's not enough, however, to have programs. We have to make them work. I made sure when I found there was a scandal in the youth employment program in New York City where kids were paid to sit around and do nothing and were taught nothing with taxpayers' dollars, that that was reformed. I also think that we can't overlook, with regard to youth unemployment, the serious deficiencies in our public schools and our educational programs. We've got to make them better.
Mr. D'Amato, 30 seconds.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the continuation of a concept that we're going to make jobs available without adequate training, and for the most part, put the kids in the municipal halls, whether they're city halls or the county or town halls, a see-to-make-work kind of job, in the long run becomes unproductive. At the end of 18 months, you ask that youngster to go back out on the streets. We need real jobs and real job training. You give industry tax incentives to do that, and to do that training. Take it out of the city halls, and maybe we have a chance to bring about a situation where we encourage people to be productive.
Thank you very much. Steve Flanders, do you have a question, please, for Mr. D'Amato?